Then he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for a burnt offering, and arose and went to the place which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, the lad, and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. So Abraham took the wood off the burnt offering, and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. Then he said, look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there, and placed the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Verse 11, but the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and then behind him was a ram caught in the thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. Now this right here shows you God delivered Isaac because of the faithfulness of Abraham. I don't have children right now. I could only imagine what he was going through. I don't know if I'd be able to do it. But this showed how just his faith in the Lord was so strong and so great. I mean, this is another instance of how God delivers by faith. Now, we're going to go to Genesis 37. We're going to be talking about Joseph. Yes, Genesis 37, 17. Everybody there? Genesis 37, 17? Okay, thank you. And the man said, they have departed from here let me go one verse ahead or two. Now a certain man found him, and there he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you seeking? So he said, I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flock. And the man said, they have departed from here, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Now when they saw him afar, even before he came near them, they conspired him to kill him. Then they said to one another, look, this dreamer is coming. Okay, so we're going to come on to verse 20. Joseph cast into the pit. Come therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say some wild beast had devoured him. We shall see what will become of him. But Reuben heard it, and delivered him out of their hands, said, let us not kill him. So there was a lot of jealousy going on here. So the brothers cast him into the pit, and he was sold into slavery. Now, let's go to Genesis 42. Now there's a famine in the land, and in Israel, and they were out of food, so they had to do something. So they knew that Egypt had plenty of food, so they were going to go to Egypt. So in 42 it says, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, why do you look at one another? And he said, indeed I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, and we may live and not die. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. So there, like I said, we have this famine going on, and it's all about survival. Now, Joseph knew when his brothers came into Egypt, he knew exactly who they were. And like I said, I'm not going to get into full details, but you know, he detained some of his brothers and sent back to get the youngest brother, Benjamin, which, let's go to chapter 43. Oh, actually, let me go to 42:36. And Jacob, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you want to take Benjamin." Now, Benjamin was the youngest son. And I think that was the biggest reason why Joseph asked for Benjamin, because they sold him into slavery, or threw him in the pit and sold him into slavery. So he's testing his brothers to see how much they actually cared about their family. And Jacob, their father, said to them, "You betrayed me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more." Okay. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." But he said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you will bring down my gray hair and sorrow to the grave." Now, 43. Now the famine was severe in the land, and it came to pass, they had eaten up the grain which they had bought from Egypt, that their father said to them, "Go back, buy us a little food." Judah spoke to him, saying, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face until your brother is with you.'" So this was Joseph saying, listen, he's testing his brothers. Bring him to me, because he wouldn't see the love that he had for them, for his brothers. So we go down and we see that he announces himself as brothers, who he is. Now, God put him in there for a specific reason. Now, at first, it's like, why would God allow something like this to happen? You know, and I mean, I think maybe in some senses, Joseph was a little bit arrogant when he was a child, but you know, in some aspects, and his brothers were jealous. He got the coat and all this stuff. But God did this for a certain reason, because he knew it was going to happen. So as hard as it was, God knew Joseph was going to be able to handle this. So let's go to Genesis 46. Yes. And this is when his family comes to Egypt. Israel took his journey with all, and Israel is a name for Jacob. Israel took his journey with all that he had and became to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." So he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will put his hand on your eyes." Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father, Jacob, the little ones. So Joseph, through all his trials, tests, and turmoil that he's been through, he showed faithfulness to God, and he delivered his family from famine and death, from the famine. Now, we're going to go to Exodus, and we're going to be going on to Moses. Like I said, this is just examples of how God delivers and how our faith is a really big test. Are we trusting in what we do, or are we trusting in what God does? So Exodus 1. And like I said, I wrote little headings on is the oppression and enslavement of the Hebrews. Now, these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt. Each man in his house came with Jacob, Reuben, Simeon, all the way down. So after all this, the Egyptians, their Pharaoh thought, he's like, man, they're becoming increasingly more and more, and we cannot let them overtake us. So the Egyptian bondage in verse 8, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, 'Look, the people, children of Israel, are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply and inhabit in the event of war, that they also join our enemies and fight against us, and so go up out of the land Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them and their burdens, and built Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were in dread of children of Israel. So we're going to go now to Exodus 1:22. Now, I know most of us have heard this, but it's noteworthy going over. I'm going to read two ahead. Therefore, God dealt with the midwives. The people multiplied and grew very mighty, and it was because the midwives feared God, and he provided households for them. So Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. So they're trying to kill off the children, the newborn's first sons, just so they cannot produce more for Israel. Exodus 2, the birth of Moses, God prepares a deliverer. And a man of the house of Levi went out and took as wife a daughter of Levi. So the woman conceived, bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it as with asphalt pitch, but the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river banks. So this right here is another type of deliverance. For Moses, his family did not want him to die, but they knew he couldn't stay with them. So he put him in the basket, put him in the river, and he was delivered into the hands of the Egyptians for God's glory and purpose. So let's go to Exodus 3. Now this is a part of God talking to Moses about the deliverance of his people in the burning bush. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flame of fire from the midst of the bush. So he looked down, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, I will now turn aside and see the great sight, why the bush does not burn. So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him in the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. He said, here am I. And he said, do not draw near this place. Take off your sandals for this holy ground. So now God is talking to Moses about how he wants him to deliver his people. Okay. Now, this one I'm not going to read too much into, but this was a way, Exodus 7, chapter 7 through 11, it's talking about the 10 plagues. Now, this is a way of God hardening Pharaoh's heart. And he would not let his people go up to the last one where God took the firstborn of Egypt and he finally let them go. Now, if you could, please go to Exodus chapter 12. And all of this is corollary to what Christ was going to do for us. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be your beginning of months, and it shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak to all of the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb, according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of persons. So your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You take it from the sheep or from the goats. Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. Then the whole assembly of congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight. And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they eat. Then they shall eat the flesh that night, roasted in the fire, with unleavened bread, with bitter herbs, and shall eat it. Now, this blood was a representation of the future of what Christ was going to do for us. And the reason they did this, and most of us know this, but it's always worth going over. The angel of death was coming, and when he seen the blood on the doorpost, it passed over. That's why they call it Passover. And obviously, we see all the Egyptians' firstborn were dead, of the children, of the animals, everything. So now we're going to go to Exodus 13. And like I said, this is all a part of the deliverance. Let's see. All right, yes, 13:21. Actually, I'll go to 17, but we're going to be on 21. Then it came to pass, Pharaoh had let the people go, and that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up in order ranks out of the land of Egypt. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here with you. So they took their journey from Succoth and camped at Etham at the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so they go day by night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night for the people. So God was guiding his people while he was cloaking them from the enemy. Now we're going to go to Exodus number four, or chapter 14, and Pharaoh's pursuing. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi Hahiroth, between Migdal and the sea, opposite Baal Zephon. You shall camp before it by sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart, so he will pursue them and will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all his army, and the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. Now it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled, and the heart of the Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, we have done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us. So again, Pharaoh's heart was hardened by all these things happening. So he made ready his chariot and took his people with him. He also took 600 choice chariots and all the chariots of Egypt and the captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. And so, miraculously, only how God could do this, nobody else could do this, the Israelites were crossing the Red Sea, and he parted it, and as the enemies came down on him, he closed the sea. He delivered them from the Egyptians once again. Next, we're going to go to, and this is still a part of Moses, Numbers 21, verses 4 through 9. Numbers 21, 4 through 9. 4 through 9. I'm going to read from verse 1 through 9, but, you know. The king of Arad, the Canaanite, who dwelt in the south, heard that Israel was coming on the road of Atharim. Then he fought against Israel and took some of them prisoners. So Israel made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will indeed deliver this people into my hand, I will utterly destroy their cities. And the Lord listened to the voice of Israel and delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them in their cities. So the name of the place was Horma. Now verse 4. Then they journeyed from Mount Or by the way of the Red Sea to go to the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. And the people spoke against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes with worthless bread. So this is the manna God gave to them, and they're cursing it. So the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many people of Israel died. Therefore, the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord. and against you, pray to the Lord that he takes away the serpents from us. So Moses prayed for the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, make a fiery serpent and set it on a pole. And it shall be everyone that who is bitten, when he looks at it, shall live. So again, this is by faith. God told him, he's like, you're going to put this serpent on a pole and you look at it. Kind of a foreshadowing of John 3:16. So now we're going to turn to 1 Samuel and move on to King David. 1 Samuel chapter 16. Now, I'm just going to read these three verses because, like I said, I don't want to dive too deep into it, but this is when David was anointed as king, 11 through 13. And before, he was looking at all the other sons, but he says, no, this isn't what I'm looking for. And Samuel said to Jesse, are all the young men here that he said there remains yet the youngest, and there he is keeping the sheep? And Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for he will not sit down till he comes here. So he sent him, brought him in. Now he is ruddy, with bright eyes, good looking. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is the one. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David. And that day forward, so Samuel arose and went to Ramah. Now, this was basically God saying, you know, because the people of Israel, instead of wanting God as king, they wanted a man. And that's why Saul was chosen. And Saul got a little too big for his britches, and I guess in some way, shape, or form, thought of himself as God. And God's like, no, this isn't how we're doing it. Turn to 1 Samuel 17, verse 34. And this is going to be a couple, but this is going to be like the biggest... longest one we're going to do for the rest of the time. 17:34 through 50. So, it says, but David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or bear came, took the lamb out of the flock, I went out after it, struck it, delivered the lamb from its mouth, and when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and the bear, and the uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. So Saul clothed David with his armor and put bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened sword to his armor and tried to walk, but he's like, yeah, I'm not doing this no more. It's too heavy. So then he took his staff in his hand and he chose himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put in the shepherd's bag in a pouch, which he had with a sling in his hand, and drew near the Philistine. So the Philistine came and began drawing near David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, and he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with sword, with spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver me and you into my hand, and I will strike you, and I will take your head off you. And this day I give the carcass of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all the assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So it was, then the Philistines arose and came and drew near to meet David. And David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead. So the stone sank into his forehead and fell on his face here. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in David's hand. So David took Goliath's sword and took his head from his body. All right. So we're going to go to 1 Samuel chapter 19. Now, again, as I was saying before, Saul fell out of favor with God. And so in chapter 19, it's basically discussing how Saul tried to kill David. Matter of fact, he's tried to kill him numerous times because he was paranoid, jealous, because of his power. And when we go to 1 Samuel 20, Saul's own son Jonathan, probably David's closest companion in his life, warned David about what his dad was about to do. And then we're going to, then 1 Samuel 24 and 26, David spares Saul two times. After all the times he's been hunting him down and all these things, David could have taken his life, but he showed mercy. And then in 1 Samuel 31, Saul dies, and David finally delivered from Saul. We're going to go to one more place, and we're going to go in the book of Daniel. We're going to go to Daniel 3. Like I said, this isn't going to be super long, but just comprehensive to where we see so many different examples of how God delivers. Daniel chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and it was width 6 cubits. He set it up, plain of Dura, province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word together, satraps, the administrators, governors, the counselors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all these people of the provinces and the kingdom. So basically with what's going on here, it's like you're going to worship this golden statue, or you're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said that's not happening because we only worship God. And obviously, you know, and verse 8 it says, therefore the certain Chaldeans came forward, accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made decree to everyone who bears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, psaltery, symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whosoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews who you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these men, O king, have not paid due regarding to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image you have set up. So, out of all this, he throws them in there, and we're going to go to verse 24, or I'm sorry, 22. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed the men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they were all slain. Now, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. Look, he answered, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. So, God delivered Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego because of their faithfulness. So we're not going to worship some false god that's not alive. We're going to worship you, God. And he delivered, not only did he deliver them, he was there with them. And the last, we're going to go to Daniel 6. One of my favorites. Great name. 6:16. So the king gave command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions, because again, you know, Daniel, you know, he worshipped God and would not worship anything but God. He prayed, did all his prayers, and they said that was a no-go, so you got to die. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you have served continually, he will deliver you." Now this is from the king. He grew very fond of him. Then a stone was brought and laid at the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it in his own signet ring with the signets of his lords. The purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No musicians were brought before him. Also, his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out, lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you've served continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angels to shut the lions' mouths, so that they would not have hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." Now the king was exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den. No injury whatsoever was found on him, because he believed in his God. Now, unfortunately for the people who accused him, they were tossed in the lion's den with their families. So all of this is just a precursor of the future of having faith in God. He's going to deliver us. Now, I was recently led onto this illustration, and I thought it was pretty good. Actually, my mom, I give her all the credit for this, because now I'm giving you all the credit for this. We were talking about this, and over the last couple of months, Heritage and Christian Bible Church has been going through some things. We had a semi go through our church. Pastor Greg has had his health issues. Not a coincidence. God delivered us to each other, to support each other. The church is not a building. It's the people in the building. Let's go to John 14. Verses 6 and 7. John 14, verses 6 and 7. Jesus said to him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you have known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you know him and have seen him." So, I'm going to go to Romans 3:23. "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." All. Especially myself. We have all sinned. Nobody is, you know, everybody is on this list. Everybody that's ever lived, save Christ. His love is amazing. His salvation is amazing. I'm gathering myself. I don't deserve his salvation. A lot of times I'm like, I'm just not worthy to even be up here. But we go to Romans 16:3. It says, "For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord." John 3:16, "For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life." God sent his Son to the world not to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved through him. This is a theme. We go back to the wilderness with Moses, and what did God tell Moses, he's like, put this serpent on a pole, lift it. And whoever looks upon it shall be healed. What did Jesus say to Nicodemus in John? He says, so must the Son of Man be lifted up. Ephesians 2:8-9 says, for by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. There will be nobody in heaven bragging before God, God, look how good I am. Oh, Lord, I endured to the end. No, that's not what it is. Jesus gets all the credit. Only him. He is the master of life. He is life itself. And like I said, we are so blessed and fortunate to live in a country to where we are able to worship Jesus. And we're able to give the gospel to others because he wants it so that nobody should perish and be lost. He wants us to give the gospel to people. That's what life is about. We need to get the gospel to the people. I got to witness to this kid on Wednesday at the store. He had a sign. He was kind of begging. And so I helped him out with a certain issue, and I got to witness to him. And we should never, ever assume that somebody's heard the gospel. We don't know. That's why we need to go to people and talk to them. There's only one gospel. Christ died, was buried, and rose again for the forgiveness of sins. That's what he did for us. He took the payment. He took our sins so we would not have to pay for it in eternity. One last illustration. And this is the last one. There's these two friends. One friend goes to the other friend, says, I cannot believe in a God who would willingly let me go to hell. The one friend looks at him and says, imagine yourself if you were trapped in your house and there was a fire. You had no way out. Then all of a sudden, a firefighter comes up. He makes a way for you. He says, your deliverance is here. Follow me to get out of the fire. Now, God gave us Jesus Christ. He is the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by him. Now, it's our choice. God says, I love you so much, I'm going to give you a choice. You can either believe what I did, I paid for you, I paid it all, or you can spend eternity in hell and pay for yourself. But why would you want to do that? God gave you that choice. He did it all for us, everybody that's lived. I don't know why anybody would turn it down, but man is so religious. They have to feel like they have something in part to do with their salvation, which we know that's not true. The law will never say it. The law is like a mirror. It shows us what we've done wrong in our lives,